CliffCentral.com.
All right. It is Monday morning. It is the 20th of March, and supposedly the national shutdown going ahead. Patrick says in the comments, apparently in Hlanhla Lux, said his house was bombed in Soweto. Family's in hospital, but he's fine. And I saw an update of his. Yeah. I mean, he's just...
By who? Bombed?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he could mean that, like, someone threw a Molotov cocktail at them. I don't know what the detail is. That's all I've heard is what Patrick's comment is. But, you know, Hlanhla Lux has been a very vocal opponent of the EFF in many situations. So I wouldn't be surprised if there is some kind of targeting going on here. We know, for example, they're trying to target certain policemen, which is just unacceptable. But we'll keep an eye, obviously, and we'll let you know what happens as the stuff comes in. Let us know what you're up to. People are very, very concerned about the braai that we had at Cliff Central with the staff got together and had a braai. And Snay says, this braai is very concerning. Mash must never come near a braai stand again. If you saw the video, I mean, there were flames roaring up high into the trees virtually. And this meat was turned to ashes and cinder. Can't be very healthy. It's
carcinogenic.
Absolutely. And, you know, clearly Mash thought this was this is an acceptable way to braai. So, look, I'm not getting involved because I wasn't even there for that. But it did sound like everybody thought the meat was completely overcooked. And therefore, yeah. I don't know that we'll be allowing Mash to be the braai master again anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've got to choose your braai person very carefully. If you have a group of people at your house and you're deciding who's going to braai, if it's your house, it usually should be you. But if there's someone who really knows what they're doing, then get them, you know?
Do you know, for me, the person who really knows what they're doing is the person who asks the guests what they would prefer.
You think?
You know, there's so many people who think that braaiing is just doing it their way. I'm going to braai and that's all they focus on. But it should be like a restaurant where you ask people how they'd like their meat done. And right. I bet you a lot of these people who think they can braai wouldn't actually know how to braai meat to a certain taste or a certain liking.
I just kind of thumbsuck and guess. You know, I'm like, it's probably been on long enough. I look at it, I use my eyes and then I guess. And sometimes I get it spot on and I'll admit I'm pretty good. I mean, a lot of guys think they're good at the braai, so I'm not going to overplay my hand here. But I think I'm pretty good at the braai. I mean, I'm not the best. I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, that's absolutely phenomenal every time. But when I've done it, I've usually done a good job. And I think it largely depends on the quality of the meat and how you season it and how long you marinate it and all that stuff beforehand. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a food guy at all. But I mean, cooking meat is kind of a fairly simple process. And it's never been... to my taste anyway, whether I'm cooking for myself or for other people, never been a problem. Never been like Mash, for example, who clearly cannot do it. You know, in this case, and I'm afraid if we're judging Mash harshly, it's his own fault because he's the one who decided. He's the one who decided.
Sorry, Mash.
And they filmed it. I mean, we have the video evidence of, you don't want flames, great roaring flames. Nowhere is that the way to cook meat. You want your coal to be really hot, but not so hot that it just incinerates the stuff. And, you know, then you create huge flames and it's not good. Anyway.
Yeah.
Here's something from the city of Cape Town, which is quite interesting with regard to the shutdown for today. The city of Cape Town's law enforcement members this weekend removed more than 2,000 tires that were placed around Cape Town. Now, again, I mean, I asked earlier, where do they get these tires? But the more important question to me seems to be, what kind of organization does it take? Who are the people who are putting these tires out? And are they being paid? Is this how these things are coordinated? I mean, I hate to sound stupid about this, but I honestly know nothing about how these protests take place. I know that tires burning in the road used to be like during the apartheid era. It was a big part of blocking off certain roads, stopping the police in those days, you know. Mm. And Caspers and those old police vehicles of getting into like certain parts of the township. So it was a way of retarding the progress of the police. But is this still Is this still how we do things? Have we not come up with anything new or better since the 1970s and 80s? Is this just a, or is it some kind of nod to the past? I don't entirely get it. I must be honest with you.
Yeah. I also wonder how these things are organized. And surely it must be through social media. It must be through private groups. It must be through WhatsApp groups. I mean, if you think about the riots, how was it organized? Did you receive anything on your phone saying we're going to riot? Join us?
No. I wasn't invited, so I'm feeling very left out. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that. Yeah.
Would I get a message saying this is where you need to go and fetch the tires from? How do you know?
Oh, right. I mean, I feel very left out. I feel like just because I'm white, they just didn't even think to ask me. Maybe I would have joined. You'll never know now, guys. You'll never know. So
your morning could have been very different.
I would have been up early like these guys in Bromfontein or Witbank or wherever else they're doing their stuff. I mean, it's very disappointing. What can I say? Most of those old and used tires are always available. There are guys selling used and retread tires in the township. I wish this kind of cleanup would take place every month, says Teboho. Yeah. Yeah, I suppose they also just, it's cheap, because used tires are cheap. They probably don't cost anything. People throw them out a lot of the time. So there are a lot of them around and they're flammable. Rubber burns.
They're long burning as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe that's
not like a firework because that would be a bit disappointing. You need something that burns for a long time so that all the media cameras can see it happening.
Well, I mean, again, I have to say, I obviously sound really dumb about this, but I don't think about protests all the time. I'm not one of those people who's considering this the most important thing in my life. I suppose for the EFF, it is a big deal. This is their moment to shine,
Did you check if there was not a tire underneath Masha's braai?
Well, trust me, when I saw those flames, I thought it was. And there was a lot of smoke as well, apparently. I wasn't there. Like I said, I'm just judging by the video. So,
okay.
Hoodie Dave says, Hardy Dave, sorry, says, what about cooked meat, smoked meat? There's a controlled way to cook meat that preserves it for longer and gives it a unique taste. We don't have to set fire to everything. Well, you get those cookers that people are, that they, what are they smokers. Called? Like the egg thing that a lot of people Weber. Have. No, very expensive.
Oh, the green one, yeah. Yes. It's called the green something.
The green egg or whatever. That thing is apparently an incredible device. I mean, you could just do anything with it. And, of course, there are those very, very smart people who have like the temperature reading needles that you put into the meat to check the inside temperature, the center of it.
Yeah, put it into the animal's ass.
Right, exactly. And you could tell everything you need to know. All delightful, obviously. But again, if you're going to be at that level where you're almost treating it like a science experiment, I don't know if you take some of the fun out of it. All I know is I love beautifully cooked meat. And shame, I heard this horrible thing on our neighborhood group with all the load shedding that's been going on and people have had power outages and substations, cable theft, all that kind of shit. This one woman on the neighborhood group said, I went out last week and I bought our groceries, our meat for the month. And because the power's been off so long, we've had to throw all of it out. So we just won't be eating meat this month. And I suddenly thought, shit, man, that's really not acceptable. You start seeing ordinary people's lives are affected in the most dreadful ways. And it just makes me sad.
Really does.
As mentioned, I'm kind of in between house sitting at my brother's for the month. He has solar power, but his actual fridge gave in, the element gave in.
Oh no!
And to throw away all of that stuff, it feels horrible. When the frozen schnitzels are actually hanging limply, the ice cream is liquid. It's become milkshake.
Oh no.
And these big dustbin bags full of wasted food feels absolutely terrible. For that exact reason, I go to the shop almost every day, maybe every second day, and I buy food just for that day or the next day. I don't freeze things anymore because of just hashtag lifestyle.
Well, I felt sorry for this woman when she put the message up. That's only now. and we've been, you know, the theme has been like fire and bries and tires and all this.
And meat. We've got a bit of theme
going here. Darcy Knows says, I'm on my way into the office. The EFF and Julius can suck a bag of dicks. Good for you, Darcy Knows. I'm pleased and proud to see people are doing this. I see a lot of people are also, government departments are open today. They said there is no reason that they won't be open. Again, if that is the case, then, and I have no reason to believe it isn't, then good for them. Let's go. Let's just carry on like there's nothing happening. Seamus said, the Navy have launched the submarine in Simonstown in anticipation of the riots. Oh my God. Gotta love that.
I just got it now.
Jesus, Leanne, a bit slow on Monday, hey?
Yeah. Look, like that fridge magnet you gave me. What does it say? I'm awake. I'm here. Don't push it.
Something like that. All right. Weather is horrible, says Tracy. I presume Tracy is in the Western Cape. So, okay, again, would you prefer, like, what kind of weather is perfect for a protest? First of all, for the protesters and then for the rest of us. I would say if it's very hot, that's good weather because then it makes people lazy and tired and they prefer not to protest. So they usually skip the protest, don't you think?
Or what? Which would you prefer to protest in? Searing heat?
No. Well, I'm asking both.
Thunderous rain.
Right. So which would you prefer?
I take the rain over the heat.
So you would rather go into the rain and get all wet and miserable and...
Yeah, because once you're wet, you're wet. But you can't get wetter, but you can get hotter.
Okay. All right. I'm going to say from the point of view of not being in the protest, which is always going to be my case, then yeah. I'd like it to be boiling hot because I think that people get lazier when it's very, very warm and then they skip all of that stuff. I was going to protest, but now it's too hot and uncomfortable and I'd rather be in the shade and, you know, have something to drink. And so I would say that's the best weather for it. But there is a good argument that if you are going to protest and it starts piercing down with rain, that's also going to put out the protest. And also it'll put out the tires, which is good.
Yeah, like Tracy says, weather is horrible. EFF and bad weather aren't exactly good friends. They cancelled their protest in Franschhoek last year.
Yeah. Apparently the other thing about this is quite interesting because a lot of people are talking about it. So over the weekend, I was having conversations with people about this too. People are saying that the taxi industry is very much against this shutdown. Obviously, it affects their bottom line, right? Mm. It's a day out of their economy that you're taking away. If there are no people going to work or if less people are going to work, it's less money for the taxi industry. So they are apparently very pissed off about this and are not mincing their words about it. They are dead against the EFF and will be meeting them in the streets, according to some people. So we'll see what happens.
There were a lot of politically aligned groups that were invited to take part in the process, but publicly declined. Because they just don't agree with the concept behind it and don't see how it'll help.
Well, I don't think it can help. It's just really, this is political posturing. And it's something that we've become used to seeing from a lot of politicians. Just a while ago, the DA had that march through the center of Joburg, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And I still said at the time, if you'd told anyone back in 1994 or 99 even, that the DA would be the ones who'd amassed thousands of people in the center of Joburg.
I would say, toying in Joburg.
Are you high? That's not possible. Meanwhile, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Janet, agree, love the meme. Oh, so Janet says, I'm loving the memes that are circulating about the protests today. So we'll see what happens. Listen, I'm holding thumbs that number one, and I don't want to be completely flippant about this because I do think that there are things that we must take seriously here. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a very fractious and difficult time. And my biggest fear about today because I'm not one of those, not a prepper. I'm not extremely nervous. I'm not afraid to go to the shops or do my thing that I have to do today. I wasn't even afraid to come into the office today, but we decided we'd just play it safe anyway. I think you have to be sensible. The worst thing that can happen is that there is some kind of violent incident, not only because it will ignite passions on both sides, the police and the protesters, never a good idea. Then you end up with, you know, rubber bullets or worse. And I don't think we want that. We've got a history in this country of very, very bad things happening. You know, ironically, this day is the day of Sharpeville, which is why it's called Human Rights Day. And we all know what happened on that day. And if you don't, you should be ashamed of yourself because it's an important part of our history. But there were students protesting the use of Afrikaans at schools. They took to the streets, and in the townships around Johannesburg, the police came at it in certain places, like in Sharpeville, in a very heavy-handed manner. And there were people killed. And famously, the Hector Peterson Memorial in Soweto is a memorial to that day. Hector Peterson famously was one of the kids who was killed in that protest on that day. And we don't want anything like that. We don't want to sit here 10 years from now going, oh, you know, that was an ugly day in our history on the 20th of March when there was that national. The last thing we want, first of all, because it makes the EFF feel important and like they've got their own struggle going on, and that they, you know, that they're a very important player in the politics of South Africa. And they're not really. They're a minority party. They're not even the main opposition party. This could make them a lot more famous if it goes horribly wrong. If it's just a damp squib and nothing happens, which is what Pumi predicted, it's what Herman Mashaba predicted on Thursday, it's what Ian Cameron predicted on Thursday. I hope those three, who I think are quite smart people, I hope they're right. Because if nothing happens today and it's just business as usual, then it makes the EFF look really dumb. So let's see what happens. Teboho says, the worst impact of these power cuts has definitely been the fridge contents. Mm. Yeah, that's the primary concern for most people. I get annoyed with no internet connectivity. Mm. I think that's also a big problem for people. Did you see the linear with the potholes? We'll send the linear? Ruth, I don't understand. I think it's a meme or something. Anyway, we need water cannons, Gray, going hardcore here. We need water cannons and rubber bullets, not real bullets. Citizens have to be disciplined. Good stuff, though. I don't disagree. Well,
that was the police in Cape Town who held a press conference to state their readiness for today. And they said, we have everything, like basically they were saying, we have every kind of toy at our disposal. If you don't feel the water, you will feel the rubber bullets, they said.
Apartheid was a problem, says Hardy Dave. The thugocracy is a problem. We can't change the past, but we need to stop making past issues bigger than the present issue. Interesting comments. Ancient Ether says nothing will happen today. Well, again, like I really hope you're right. I wish for nothing more. I'd like us to just, that's why we're here doing the show this morning, just carry on as usual. We got shit to do. We're going to carry on doing it. Let's all have a happy day. That kind of thing, you know? EFF who, says Warwick. I love that. Slippery Pickle says, Malema wasn't that bad at Afrikaans, but he got 12% for maths on his matric certificate. That's probably why this protest isn't adding up.
Yeah.
We will have to see what happens. All right. In other stories, I mean, Leanne has got some interesting stuff here for us. The world's first three-year cruise starts in November. Now, that's 3 years of your life. I mean, I suppose you can get on and off, right? Because then
absolutely.
Not going to prison on a ship for 3 years, even if it is a luxury cruise liner. 3 year cruise. How does this work?
Look, I saw this and I thought it was crazy. But when you start reading into it, the thing is that this cruise with everything included, like your food, everything, I mean, you don't pay for anything else, costs less than some mortgage payments. Think about that. So if you don't have any, for someone like me, I don't have children or a husband or, you know, a partner.
Don't you have children?
I'm sorry. I meant to tell you, it was the first thing on my list.
Oh, I thought
just
I
never really got to it.
Sorry. I thought you were Tolgren.
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So for someone like me, I mean, okay, so it's 3 years. It's called Life at Sea Cruises. This is the first time ever. It's like the ultimate bucket list cruise without having to sacrifice any comforts from home. It's basically your home at sea with the world as your backyard, they call it. They're visiting 135 countries, basically all of the continents. Begins on November the 1st. It's 130,000 miles. Starts in Istanbul with pickups in Barcelona and Miami. It's called the MV Gemini. It'll visit 375 ports, allowing travelers to spend multiple days in some to explore. The itinerary takes passengers from South America to South America, Antarctica. You get to see the glaciers, ice formations. You're then off to the Caribbean, Central America, seeing the ancient Mayan ruins, North America and Hawaii, 98 days there. You get the chance to explore landscapes in Alaska, 23 destinations, including ancient temples in Asia. You're in Asia for 70 days. The longest leg of the journey is for 206 days in the South Pacific. You'll visit Australia, Sydney, Melbourne, the beaches of Fiji.
Talking about Australia, Leanne. They're also they're people
New
too.
Zealand, rainforests. You then go off to southern and western Africa, so you get to see the Serengeti, Zanzibar, Madagascar. In Europe, you visit 38 countries. It just sounds
okay. Look,
it doesn't sound half bad. World class dining.
I'm sure it's not bad. Okay. Let me just be clear about this. So I think this is almost like a replacement for living at home. If you mustn't think of it as it's not a world cruise. It's like you're moving house for 3 years and your house is going to be a floating palace on, I mean, here, for example, Tracy says, I can't imagine being on a floating shopping mall for 3 years. Listen, some of these ships are magnificent. Mm. And if you're not the kind of person who needs to be in one place, who likes to nest, who likes to have their stuff around them, if you're the kind of person who wants to explore the world, this could be amazing. I mean, having been on these cruise ships before, I can tell you, some of them are palatial. And you can have any food you want. Some of them are super smart. They're not these dodgy, clammy cans on the ocean that are rattling around with like shitty food on them or anything. Some of them are amazing. And if you spend 3 years on there and you get to stop in all these amazing places all over the world and get off and go and explore, it's like the longest holiday ever. What I mean, I think I'd be keen on that.
I know, right?
It'd be quite
like
fun.
Either selling your house or renting it out, let it pay for itself. It's got a massive business center with actual offices. So you can work from offices. There's a 24-hour on-call hospital, which includes free medical visits. There are learning and enrichment classes. There are opportunities to volunteer. And actually, you get opportunities on the land to volunteer as well. There's 100% connectivity the whole time to in terms of being online. You can choose the size of your cabin. There's wellness centers. Oh,
I think if you decide that this is what you want to do, I think you could have the most amazing time there. I really do.
Want to know how much it costs?
How much?
Starts at $30,000 per year. You also have the option of paying $2,500 per month. You can also get additional tax benefits.
Okay, so we're looking at somewhere around R500,000 a year. R500,000 a year is a lot of money. But if you have a job that you can do remotely and you're earning R1,000,000 a year, this is half. I mean, you probably won't have to pay taxes because you'll be in different jurisdictions the whole time.
So you're not buying food.
Not buying food. You don't have to waste money on transport. Think of how much we spend on petrol and Ubers and transport things. I mean, this could be a solution to some people. I'm telling you, should really consider it. Like 500 odd thousand a year. It's a lot of money. Don't get me wrong, but that is everything in, all in.
But also, I mean, we're taking it from a currency exchange rate point of view. But if you're earning dollars or pounds, and I mean in the UK, the mortgage rate, the interest rate has gone up astronomically.
Well, I mean, the other thing is also, like, you don't have to deal with government. You don't have to care if there are potholes. You don't have to care if there is a good president or a bad president. Lockdowns,
strikes, protests.
You don't have to give a shit about any of that
load
stuff.
Load shedding. The only thing you do have to give a shit about. I mean, imagine you signed up for this cruise and you started it in November 2019 and COVID was coming. You'd be stuck on this ship for 3 years, not being able to get off.
Well, yeah, that and obviously the other big problem is like bad weather. You know, you go through a few tornadoes, it's not so much fun.
Yeah, that's true.
But I still think those are not the biggest possible cases that you could, I mean, those are not the worst things you could deal with, you know?
You're probably safer being on a ship when it comes to weather patterns, because they can pick up on that, than you are being in your house in Texas when a tornado is coming over.
Right, right, absolutely. All right, I do want to turn our attention to something I thought was quite interesting here. So let me get into this with you quickly. Jenny Moore is from Dahlia Menopause Institute. It's D-A-L-I-A-H. The institute aims to learn what South African women in various stages of menopause want, need, and are experiencing. And she is a seasoned brand strategist. She's got an interesting career. She's been in consulting, corporate, as an entrepreneur too. She believes we need to find better ways of doing business to create a world where people and profit and the planet can sustainably coexist for generations to come. So one of the things is, according to her, ensuring that women take their rightful place in business and society. So she started this initiative. Hey, how are you, Jenny? Nice to see you.
Morning, Gareth. Thanks so much. Morning again.
Yeah, good to have you on here. So I gave a little bit of the background here, but you might want to sketch this. You said we're in the midst of what could be called a great breakup, where senior women leaders, such as the Scottish First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, who's 52, New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, who's 42, YouTube CEO Susan Wojcicki, who's 54, Meta's Sheryl Sandberg, 53, they're all leaving their organizations demanding more from work. So what do you think this is? And using those women as the example, tell me why you think that this is indicative of a greater trend.
So, Gareth, we know that menopause can be a really tough time for women. Medically, that's a proven fact. And from the experience we see, even in our research, we know that many women, have a really tough time during this transition period. And I think increasingly, as women are feeling more empowered to make decisions for themselves, we're seeing women, like you've just mentioned, saying, actually, the workplace isn't supporting us. We're not getting what we need. And we're stepping out to do something else, to take control of our own journeys, take control of our lives, and move into a space that is more conducive for our own well-being.
But in the case of Nicola Sturgeon and Jacinda Ardern, both of whom I can't stand, that they were actually voted out. They've been asked to leave by their parties and by the voters in those countries because they're such awful, off-putting people. So I don't know if we can blame the menopause for that, can we?
You can't use this platform and this slot.
No, I'm just saying that.
Or every slot to voice your hatred for Jacinda.
No. You could say this is true for Sheryl Sandberg, and there are probably lots of women in South Africa who also. I mean, so what is the relationship here? Explain to me as a stupid caveman, like what happens with women who are going through the menopause in a work situation? Does work become so unbearable? Are the people at work just not understanding? Like, what's the story here? Like, why should anyone care about this instead of people just going, well, you know, get on with it?
I love that question. Yes, exactly. Why shouldn't we just get on with it, right? This is a perfectly normal, natural part of a woman's life. the reality is that at any given time during what is potentially a decade-long journey, if not longer for some women, you're experiencing between 8 and 12 symptoms related to your menopause. And that starts in early menopause, early perimenopause, all the way through to till your late 50s when you're most likely to be in the postmenopause phase. So at any given time, you're dealing with mood changes, which can lead to anxiety, heightened anxiety, depression, mood swings, which unfortunately have become quite stereotypical of the menopausal woman. You're dealing with physical issues, hot flashes, inability to sleep. You're dealing with forgetfulness. And all of these things all work at the same time on a woman. And that makes it a pretty tough time for a woman to then also be typically a partner, for many South African women, a mother. And considering where most women are in their mid to late 40s in their career, that's usually a time when you're starting to step into more senior roles, more responsibility. You've got a lot of experience that you're contributing to your particular field. And so you've got these multiple pressures. And then add to that a culture in the workplace which says menopausal women are less productive, menopausal women are not useful in my team because maybe they forget things or they need a bit extra support, so we don't want them on our teams. And they end up being victimized and ridiculed in the workplace for something that is perfectly natural. And if they were just allowed to talk about it, they might be able to get the right support so that they can be productive and bring all of that valuable experience to the workplace.
I'm in the perimenopausal phase at the moment, and I'm already detecting changes. And they're all the sorts of changes that you want to keep quiet about, and you don't want to let your boss know. You don't want to speak to you or let your colleagues know. You don't want your clients to know. All of those symptoms that are starting to happen automatically make you feel ashamed. You don't want to appear as old. You don't want to be put into a certain group of people. It's not easy. Yeah. It really isn't. And I think we're over those times where we've said in the past, just get on with things. That's not helpful.
I'm going to throw a spanner in the works here. And I know, you know, Jenny, I know you're working hard on this and you know way more than I do about this, but I have to be the devil's advocate here and go, oh my God, this sounds like hell. I'm just rather hiring men. Right?
What happens.
And maybe we don't vote. Maybe we don't vote for women who are in their 40s and 50s because we know they're going to like Jacinda Ardern go, oh, I'm too tired. I need to get out of this job. Then let's rather just not let women do these jobs.
Well, I can see why you'd say that. But
very dangerous.
We know that diversity is critical to business success.
Is it?
It's critical to it. The research is vast on that subject.
I'm not so sure it is. I mean, what we've learned is that diversity, when there is a common goal, is terrific, and there are different points of view that are brought in. There's no evidence to show that diversity for its own sake does any good at all. None.
It's not diversity for its own sake. It's diversity for ensuring that we bring the woman's voice to the table, that a woman is able to be part of the economic journey of a country, of a company, of her own life, and that women are able to actively participate, whether it is at a societal level, a business level, or in the home.
I don't doubt that there are some things that have been vastly improved. In fact, probably the majority of things that have been vastly improved by a diversity of men and women, of people of different cultural backgrounds, people of different circumstances, all throwing their very different experiences into the pot. But if we look at like cold hard facts, like the military of every era before this one, which was almost entirely male, I mean, they do tend to get things done. And whether or not there's diversity, the military seems to know what it's all about. Again, I'm just being the devil's advocate. I'm not saying that we should go back to, you know, 1700, because times have changed and women have made an enormous contribution in everything, including the military. But there's very good evidence for the fact that sometimes diversity is an afterthought. It's a luxury. It's not actually a necessity.
I think we'll agree to disagree on that point, Gareth. I think that there is vast evidence to suggest that diversity actually is a necessity. But everyone's entitled to their views on that. I think the more important point, though,
I'm just because I'm the only one who's going to say this, and I do want you to explain some more of this to an idiot like me, because I'm admitting that I don't know everything. But it does sound like, on the one hand, you must be extremely thoughtful and considerate, and we must take into our businesses an understanding of menopause and what goes on with women, and we must try to make the environment better for them. All of that has to happen in addition to business, or you just don't hire women of that age. How about that? And then you don't have to worry about any of that.
What is the expectation, if I may ask, not to you, Gareth, I'm asking our guest, but what is the expectation that, what do we need as perimenopausal or premenopausal women in the workplace? What are we asking the workplaces to do? And what are we asking men to do and understand? What is the ask?
Yeah, and I think our research has been quite instructive in what women are really looking for. And it's not massive accommodations. It's not reorganizing your business around the menopausal woman. It's about the ability to speak openly and freely about what you're experiencing in your life, so that there isn't that sense of victimization or being sidelined because you're going through a particular phase of your life.
Yeah.
You know, I often liken it to, there are a myriad of things that happen as you get older, right? You can start to, your eyesight starts to deteriorate. We don't victimize people for suddenly having to see the optometrist or wear glasses. We don't victimize or stigmatize people who have to have dental work because of tooth decay when they're in their 50s. Those are
what about male hair loss, male balding? You know, and do we just say, oh, just shut up about it and get on, or do we allow them to speak to perhaps other people who are balding? Gareth, I think what I'm trying to say is that the ask is not huge. There's not a big thing here that's going to affect you and your organization. The ask is just to be aware of it and allow women to have a platform to speak to each other.
Well, if
you don't want to just hire women anymore, what's going to happen? How is society going to? Your argument.
This is not my position. I just think that there are a lot of people who probably think this way, and I want to hear the best argument against that position. And you've done the study, so tell us about Menopause, the Silent Chapter, because this must have brought about some really interesting information. I mean, there must be stuff here that I think could be very helpful to people in organizations.
Absolutely. And I think, to our knowledge, this is the first time that there's been a study of this scale in South Africa looking at the lived experience of women going through their menopause journey. And the findings have been incredibly valuable to start to understand what that lived experience is. And first and foremost, I think the ask from women is just to be heard, to be understood, and then for those who need it to be able to access support. Women are not asking for special dispensation or special conditions. They're just asking for the same thing anybody else would ask for, whether that is at home, at work, or in broader society. I think as it stands today, our research points to massive stigmatization of menopause. And I think this is inherent in a culture that celebrates youthfulness. And we see it in other cultures and other countries where youthfulness is typically seen as the ideal. As women age, they start to be pushed to the fringes of society. They start to be seen, as Leanne said earlier, old. And with being seen as old come a number of associations like being past your sell-by date, no longer being useful to society, workplace, or at home, and that you must just recede into that stereotypical quiet corner. And we know that people are living longer, people are able to contribute much longer. And so if we're going to continue to push women into a corner and keep them quiet and to tell them just to stay away, then we're going to lose the value that they can bring to society. And that's particularly, think about it, a 45 to 55-year-old woman is at the prime of her career. She's got 20-plus years of experience that she can bring to her chosen profession or workplace. She is, you know, a leader potentially in a business, in society. She has, you know, multiple points of influence. And if just because she's starting a natural process called menopause, we're not going to support her and we're going to keep her quiet and not able to express her experiences, and we're going to continue to say that now she no longer adds value, I think we're losing half our population at that age. And that would be a travesty.
Leanne, do you think a lot of women are scared to even admit that they're going into this, like that they're feeling change is happening? Do you think that, and who are these people who are like standing around talking about, you know, old Sandra over there is going through the menopause. You could see she's getting a bit slow. I've never heard a conversation like this. Look, I've never been in a corporate business, but I've never heard a conversation like that. I think most men would be embarrassed to have that conversation because it's not something that we're thinking.
It's something that happens in worlds that are a little bit different to yours and mine, Gareth. Definitely in the corporate situation, it happens a lot. It happens where I, as at the moment, I'm a freelancer, so I'm continuously a job seeker at that level, where I know my CV isn't being considered because I'm 45. It affects, you look at Hollywood, you look at newsrooms. As soon as a woman becomes a certain age, is she still worthy of sitting in the anchor's chair or being a reporter? In the meantime, there she sits with decades of experience behind her and life knowledge and skills. And all she's asking for is for a little bit of consideration for what she's going through. Which we've said can span 10 to 15 years. It's a long time. And yes, I do believe people are being quiet about it. I've been quiet about it. You know, I can hear in my female colleagues' voices when they've forgotten a name or they've forgotten something or they can't find, they're battling with word finding. I can hear they're embarrassed about it.
Well, then probably not a good thing to be in air traffic control. But I mean, otherwise, otherwise, it's probably all right. I mean, are there certain jobs that are easier on women who are going through this, Jenny? Are there certain jobs that are much, much harder?
I don't have research to prove that because it's not something we explored, but I would say from my own experience, I don't believe that's true. I think women can continue in their chosen profession, whatever that might be, as long as they're getting the right support. And support can be emotional support, physical support, medical support. There are solutions that keep women at the top of their game, whatever that might be. So you don't have to be a victim of your symptoms. There are solutions. The problem is most women don't know about those solutions and they don't know how to access them. And that's one of the things that we have to open up as part of opening up the conversation, is saying you need to be empowered to make choices for what's right for you through your menopause journey. Every journey is different. There's no stereotypical menopausal journey. Everyone has a unique experience, but you need to be equipped and enabled to make the right choices for you. And that's part of unmuting menopause.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting
point. Lower the AC. That's all we're asking.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. Like we often have debates in our offices about the air conditioning because some of the people like the air conditioning hot, some of them like it cold. I don't know whether it's an age thing. It may be a cultural thing for some people. Look, these are the things that we're all trying to learn about in work. And I do want to be very clear that we mustn't immediately, because we're talking about an issue that affects women here, suddenly think that this is some kind of, you know, anti-male, because this is how some stupid men start to behave, is they start to go, oh, well, what about men? You know, we're not talking about men this morning. We're talking about women, and we can discuss one without having to bring the other one up every bloody time. I think it's an interesting thing to discuss what those symptoms might be and how people, let's say I'm a guy in a corporation. There are a couple of women who are starting to perhaps go through some of these things. How can I be helpful, and how can I identify these things, and what sorts of things make that journey that you were talking about, Jenny, more bearable?
So I think first and foremost, Gareth, as male advocates for women in the workplace, the number one job is to let a woman feel heard and understood, to not make her feel embarrassed or ashamed to talk about her experiences. That okay, doesn't cost anything. Sorry.
Again, I just want to come in here because as a guy, what do you mean? Like, we must sit and listen to, like, sit in a circle and listen to these stories?
No, not at all. So let me give you a very practical corporate real world experience. It's hot flashes are one of the most common symptoms. It's a vasomotor symptom, and it's one of the most common symptoms that affect women. If you see a woman experiencing hot flash, she has no control over it whatsoever. And it can be almost a mortifying experience for her. I have firsthand experience of being in rooms where male colleagues have seen a woman have a hot flash in the middle of a meeting and make fun of her. And that is just adding to her sense of shame. It is just adding to her sense of pain, and it's not necessary. So can we stop making fun of women? That's a very practical way of doing things. And as a manager, more often than not, our middle and senior managers are still men in many workplaces. Can we just have the sensitivity to say, it's okay for a woman, one of my team members, to come to me and say, I'm having a really bad time right now. Can I work from home? Most organizations have adopted hybrid working, and it shouldn't be an issue anymore, but it still is. And those are some very practical things that people can do that don't change, you know, they don't change business. Business carries on as usual, but it makes the experience for women so much more manageable, so much easier. Stop making fun of them. Stop victimizing them. Stop saying, well, the minute I see that you're having a hot flash, oh my gosh, you must be in menopause, therefore you're no longer useful to me. And degrading both her sense of value and victimizing her for something that is perfectly natural. So there's some very practical things that we can do in the workplace.
I mean, surely these days, and you know, HR is like the biggest department in some of these corporations, and everybody is tiptoeing around. Surely you couldn't, if you were the kind of mean son of a bitch who would start like teasing and abusing a woman who's going through a hot, I mean, you'd be reported to HR immediately, and you'd be in huge trouble. I mean, that's unacceptable behavior, right?
You'd think so, but it's not. It's really still considered acceptable behavior in many workplaces, unfortunately. And that is the lived experience that women have played back to us. That sense of victimization is real. And unfortunately, it falls outside of sort of the narrowest definition of harassment in the workplace. And people are often too embarrassed to talk about it. I mean, a woman who's been victimized because or made fun of because she's having hot flashes during a meeting is not going to go to her HR manager and say, listen, so-and-so was making a joke of me in the work, in a meeting. They're going to keep quiet. They're going to keep their head down. They're going to try and manage that symptom as best as possible so that it doesn't happen again. That's the lived experience of women.
I would be horrified to hear that that kind of thing was happening. And I'm quite shocked to hear from you now that this is going on, that people actually will be like bringing this up and teasing and mocking and being rude to someone in a meeting. I mean, it's outrageous. I also think that, like, you know, just being mean in general has become a very taboo subject. It's not something that people would do at the office. I mean, people don't even flirt at the office anymore because it gets you into so much trouble. So I think people are absolutely terrified of doing the wrong thing in the office. Do you agree, Leanne? I mean, again, I don't have the experience of the corporate world, so this is all news to me.
It's still, I think the fact that you didn't know that that happens and now you do is the very point of this interaction.
Right.
It served its purpose.
Well, I think this is fascinating. Where can we find out more, Jenny? Because there might be a lot of people who are listening now and want to know about the study that you've done, Menopause, the Silent Chapter, know more about your Unmuting Menopause at Work, and where we can find out a little bit more about this.
Yes, absolutely. They can contact us on hello@dahlia.co.za. And there's a lot more information, the full research report, and lots of resources available on our website, which is dahlia.co.za.
That's dahlia.co.za. You can go and find out more from Jenny. And excellent stuff here. Thank you for being on the show with us this morning. And I hope you have an awesome national shutdown day and that nobody comes and gets any trouble in your area. But thanks for being part of the discussion this morning, Jenny. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Gara. Thanks, Leanne.
Thanks, Jenny.
Very, very nice. Well, see, I learned new things every
day. Flustered. But I tell you what, when they hit, it's horrible. You feel like such a fool. And the worst is it happens when you're in a public space, a pubic space.
Well, if I ever tease you, you know who to go to, HR, right?
Well, the thing is, yeah, you're very right. And I don't think you would be a person to tease over something like that. We would laugh at it together.
Well, yeah, I also think that, you know, that there are probably places where men embarrass themselves and don't know what the hell's going on. But this is what Jenny was saying, is you need to talk about these things so people actually understand each other. And you made the same point. Good stuff. All right, everybody. That's all we got time for this morning. Let me just quickly remind you that we have an incredible a series going on that we're doing with our friends at Hunt Lascaris, 40 years of Hunt Lascaris. We spoke to Reg Lascaris and John Hunt just a couple of weeks ago. But now it's the turn of Carol Soames, who's the group operations director, and George Lowe, who's the creative director, both who have decades of stories to tell. They are just two of the longstanding people who've helped shape the DNA of the agency's creative culture in the ever-changing media landscape. And while George is familiar with collecting tiny statues, Carol, who joined back in 1986 when there were only 15 people in the business, is the super glue between the clients and the departments. So you want to hear from them? That's coming up next. CliffCentral.com. It is Monday morning. Have an awesome day, everybody. We'll keep updated on social media and all the things that are going on, and we'll catch up with more of it tomorrow, I'm sure. Oh, no, tomorrow we don't have a show. Sorry, it'll be Wednesday. Ah. Tomorrow is an actual pubic holiday.
Yes, holiday.
All right. Have a happy day, everybody. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. CliffCentral.com.